there's another quote you have that I'd like you to expand on for the listeners. And that's that paradoxically, benefit is derived by the self-interest of the ego when it begins to realize that there's a great advantage to unselfishness. When it learns from the benefit of letting go of egocentric goals, the ego itself then becomes a springboard to spiritual inquiry and the means to its own transcendence.
Yes.
Realizing that humility is strength, not weakness, and that it is wisdom and not ignorance.
That's rather profound that you picked that out, because that was a pretty profound sentence. Yes, the ego reigns supreme until it hears that there's something greater than itself. Uh-oh. Now, its initial attraction is to be more than what it is. So the initial attraction to the ego, spirituality, is it pictures I'm going to be a bigger, more powerful ego. Well, it quickly learns, though, it's got momentum out of curiosity. There's more to be had. But now it's reinforced by spiritual truth, because unconsciously we all know the truth when we hear it. So now the ego itself gets duped. This is the beginning of the ego's downfall. It falls for its own egoistic, selfish vanity and gets suckered into spiritual work.
You mean we can actually trick our tricky
egos?
That's
one time the spirit gets away and outsmarts the ego. So then that starts the investigation, and then the power of truth begins to pervade, like a leak in the dike begins to undo the brick wall, and the bricks begin to lessen. The ego is put together with bricks, and it's easier to undo than people realize. Because once you undo or loosen even one brick, the whole wall begins to weaken. See, let's say your problem is rage. Why are you so angry? Then you see you're angry because you're insulted. Well, why were you insulted? Because you're coming from pride. So your problem isn't rage, hatred, or anger, it's pride. You see how one begins to loosen the other one. Then you see how you put pride on all your positionalities. You want to kill anybody that doesn't agree with you. If you're honest with your ego, it wants to kill everybody that doesn't agree with them. They all deserve to die. Okay, so the minute you begin to even question it, the ego begins to weaken. But it gets suckered in that it's going to be a bigger, more powerful ego by getting spiritual. The great majority of people relinquish that. But in people in which the spiritual ego prevails, the so-called fallen guru syndrome, there the spiritual ego should have dropped, and somehow it evaded it. It was getting too much of a payoff, and the person was maybe forcing it. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't believe in spiritual practices where you try to force the energy. I mean, when you're there, the energy rises to its level.
Can you give me an example of practices that...
Well, practices that are artificially trying to, you know, propel the kundalini energy up the chakra system and all this kind of stuff, mm-hmm. You know. You're trying to manipulate the manifestations which radiate out from the reality of that which you are. So you're trying to fake that's what you are. You're like trying to pretend you got bigger muscles than you have, and now you're going to lift 200 pounds, and you rip your tendons because you're not ready for that. The kundalini energy flows automatically as a consequence of that which you are, not what you spiritually ambitious wish to be. You can sit there breathing energy up to your crown chakra all day, and that's not going to turn you into an avatar. The world is full of them. They pass over and get dizzy and have convulsions, God knows what else. How many people in great enlightened masters got there by breathing funny? Nobody. No, it's an assist temporarily at certain points, but you cannot force that which is unnatural. And, of course, there's famous books by people who did force the energy and went up one side in the brain and not the other, and they were lopsided and, oh, God, the horrible times ahead. You know, it's kundalini insanity, all kinds of things. It's only necessary to be kind towards all of life, to see the sacredness and beauty of all of life, to have goodwill towards all that exists, including yourself. That's all you have to do, and be willing to surrender anything that stands in the way of that intention. So you don't have to read 32 books and see 42 gurus. I mean, I don't know. I get letters from people. They see this person and that person. If you took just one sentence of what the first person said in the first place and applied it, you wouldn't be looking for the second guru. What do you want to look for the second guru for?
Although many talk about having a spiritual practice like the Course in Miracles workbook,
yes,
being really committed to and disciplined with the practice.
Oh, yes. Well, that's stick-to-itiveness. That's faithfulness. Yes. So it's one thing to have heard it. It's another thing to be willing to surrender the entertainment that you get from mentalization and persist in it. All you need is one good tool and do it all the time. That's all you need. The willingness to forgive, to see things differently, to be kind, to be of goodwill towards all of life, to see its beauty and sacredness, the willingness. Doesn't say to be able to do that, because you're not a saint yet. But the way to sainthood is, I ask to see the beauty which I'm able to see at this time. So it's a commitment, it's an alignment. And then spiritual intention is like the compass on a ship. So once you've set that, now you've set your calibrated level of consciousness. Now, the fact that there is waves and you swing with the waves and the wind, but you don't change your compass. So then you just persist, surrender everything to God as it arises, let go of wanting to control it, let go of seeking ego gain for what people think of you. Who cares what people think of you? I mean, spiritually speaking, if you're a pop figure, of course, it's everything.